Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So this would be The Media Project, of course, here after the singing by Pete to bring us in. Now you have to put up with the talk. Sorry. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here this week with Stu Shinsky, editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Hello.
How do? Good to see you, sir.
Always a pleasure.
And Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, he who is our host here on these fine premises.
I got a letter from you asking me for the chords to Newspapermen.
Newspapermen.
The Pete Seeger song. Mm-hmm. And my wonderful Roselle searched our library and actually found it.
Yeah.
I took it down to the Staples. Mm-hmm. I got the guy there who's a wonderful guy, and he did an image of it, and he sent it to you over the you know, internet so that you would have it. And it turns
over
out
the
that the whole
interwebs.
Song...
Yes.
Yeah, only has... The song only has three chords.
That's all it needs.
It sounds the way Pete plays it. It sounds so good.
Pete.
Yeah, you really think that it's a complex thing. And, of course, I don't play the banjo. Dr. Chartok does. I play the ukulele. So I thought that, you know, someday we could do a little
duet.
Yeah, together.
Duet,
yes. And I have to say that that's the way Pete started. If you listen to the history of Pete, his autobiography available here, he talks about how the ukulele was his first instrument. So you're on track.
I only have a little bit more work to do to work my way up to the banjo. We can start telling banjo jokes.
After that,
right?
The kazoo.
So in the notable corrections category, which we love to have in this program, The Guardian, that wonderful paper and website from the UK, had a correction that said... The third paragraph of an article published on 17 February 2014 said, some gay people, such as Sir Patrick Stewart, think Page's coming out speech is newsworthy. That should have read, some people, such as Sir Patrick Stewart, think Page's coming out speech is newsworthy. So, unfortunately, The Guardian made the noted actor Patrick Stewart gay. He apparently is not.
He's not, and he had a great response. He said, well, I've been called dead before, so this is better. So, and this was in response to Ellen Page, the actress, announcing that she was a lesbian last week. It's an unconscionable error. How do you not double-check this? I mean, if he hadn't reacted so good-naturedly, he could have sued and won big.
Actually, in New York State, it is true that being called gay when you are not remains prima facie a defamatory statement.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Hey, Stu, I wanted to ask you a question while you're here, because in your coverage area for the Poughkeepsie Journal, mm-hmm. there are some real hot congressional races.
Yes,
these are what we call fair fights.
Yes.
In other words, most legislatures set things up so that, you know, the result is predetermined.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a whole bunch of fair fights. Does this help or hurt a newspaper?
It depends on the race, it depends on the year, and honestly, it depends on what's at the top of the ticket. In a presidential year, obviously, there's more interest. More often than not, the turnout is pretty stable in Dutchess County year to year to year, except for presidential when it goes through the roof, and except for primaries where it goes through the floor. For us, it helps us get into the issues more. It gives us an opportunity to start a conversation, to get a dialogue going. But the direct answer to your question is competition is always good.
Yeah. Okay, it's good, theoretically good, but is it also good from the point of view of getting more people to read the newspaper?
It depends on the coverage. It uh-huh. really does depend on the coverage. One thing we've noticed is op-ed columns are doing very well.
Uh-huh.
because we can now, we have a tool called Chartbeat where we can measure live, real-time readership of a web story. And we see our op-ed columns that are getting shared on Facebook, shared on social media. So issues, topics that resonate, such as something on gun control, they go through the roof on readership. So if a congressional candidate or a state Senate candidate, if they have a topic that is going to resonate, yeah, it does go up more in many cases than regular news stories.
So let me see if I get this straight, because when we have people here at WAMC who have books, who have written books, they tell us that their publishers have tools where they can show real time how many people have bought. Buying yeah. the book on one of the
very depressing
like
for an author because yeah. you know an author thinks there's going to be such great impact and you can have a bestseller if you sell a few thousand books. That's how different book buying is from say newspapering where we you know deal in tens of thousands or and so on. But still, sorry, you were making a point that that's the same thing for as what
well,
Stu's talking
what
about.
Stu was talking about because you know it's fascinating that people can do that. My son, when I write a column and it's retweeted several times, I don't know how he does it, but he always says, boy, they're retweeting your piece all over the place.
It tells you right on Twitter. It'll tell you how many retweets, how many shares on Facebook. Yeah, it's real time. And that's one of the revolutions in journalism technology is real time accountability of readership.
Yeah, it's really quite something. Although part of the question is how much attention are you going to pay to the digital sharing of this stuff? And how much of that is simply because you're offering clickbait, as they say, rather than significant journalism? Yeah, you know, we can raise our page views pretty quickly by putting photo galleries out, for example.
Or a woman floating around in space in a bikini.
Right. Oh, my yeah. goodness. Right. I didn't look. But right. But, you know, clickbait is not everything that we are about. And sometimes we talk about this all the time, of course, on this show, the difference between what you really ought to be doing, what you need to be doing to fulfill your mission and what you do simply to bring in the numbers. It's an interesting idea.
In many ways, it's good for you because it makes your numbers look good. But in many ways, it's bad for you because you really don't know what your readers want.
Right.
You really don't have a journalistic measurement of what issues are really the ones that readers are connecting with. Anyone could put up a photo gallery of cute puppies and get lots of readership or things like that, or worse. But is it an issue story? Is it an agenda story? You know, our investigative work on Lyme disease did very well on metrics.
Right.
And we don't bother with
what
a lot of the
What do you mean on metrics?
On number of readers online, number of times the stories were shared. We can segment by geography where the stories were read online. You know, we know that our Lyme coverage was read in 17 countries, for instance.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting to me, but I think, I mean, you know, I would never want to tick you off, Stushinsky, but I suspect it may be a little disingenuous. I mean, in other words, I mean, you don't know where your readers are, but you put the puppies up and everybody loves it. So then you have a theoretical examination of, you know, Social Security modifications and nobody reads it. You know, you went to college, so you think, well, that's important. It's an important issue. But in the end, your publisher's looking at you and wants to know how many metrics you have and what got
you
released. You
got to hope that your publisher is assessing you based on not just a measurement like page views. Because if you are purely in pursuit of page views, if you're not talking about engagement, you know, I bet the Lyme thing must be a perfect example yes. because it takes time for people to deal with that issue, right?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And you have to have a balance because if you just go for page views, you have to have someone to do that all the time. In a newsroom such as ours, where we have 25 people, we have to focus on what we deem to be the most important topics that our readers want. And we survey our readers scientifically. We look at our web analytics. We have focus groups. We have all sorts of ways to gauge feedback. And that's where we have to put our readers, because if we don't, we're not going to be in touch.
Well, but don't those focus groups sometimes lie? I mean, it's interesting. You got a bunch of people in a room. You got a two-way glass. You have somebody sitting on the outside. And you say, what's more important? What's happening with Social Security in this country or puppies? Well, you know, they're not going to turn around to you and say, it's the puppies.
Yeah, but you have a better focus group yeah. manager than that.
Right.
Yeah, these people
yeah.
are trained.
Well, give me an example.
Because your goal is to try to get information out of them. So you get someone who says, well, describe to me, how do you feel about the Times Union? Or what is it that you like about this? And they'll hold a paper and say, what do you read here? What are you looking at? And people actually will page through the paper and so on. So if your goal is to really find out what people are reading or what you're interested in, You don't want a focus group that just tells you nice things about you. You right. want them to be really challenged.
Well, we do it by topic. We'll look at education coverage, for instance, or we'll look at environmental coverage, and we'll keep them within that parameter to talk about what their priorities are and what they like to read or don't want to read. For instance, is it stories about the Hudson River? Or is it stories about the ecology in general? Is it stories about what people are doing to help recycling? You break it down very distinctly. Because you're right. You can bring anyone in the room, hey, I love Bugs Bunny. I don't like Foghorn Leghorn. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you take the topic and you go inside the topic, ideally you're getting information that helps go into the pot of your other tools, your analytics and your other research tools. You add that all up. You can't take one in a vacuum from the others, because otherwise you're just going down the wrong path.
This is interesting, by the way. We haven't done any focus groups in years. I mean, I think probably 8 or 10 years at the Times Union. You're a Gannett paper. You probably do more of this. I think you're more scientific about your approach. Is that right?
Yes.
Wow, how interesting.
Can I be on it?
It's on Poughkeepsie's future. Come on down.
How interesting. You know, one of these topics that we were just touching on here is a topic of some conversation, which is whether we ought to be assessed, we as editors, or whether we ought to assess our reporters and producers in our newsrooms based upon the audience reaction. And there is some question as to whether journalists pay, if editors like Stuart and I ought to be, our pay ought to be tied to traffic or to what kind of response we're generating from the audience. It's a
real
interesting
question. Well, so that's easy. More puppies, more people in bikinis floating around spaceships.
The difficult side is if you're doing your job, you may not necessarily only be generating content. My publisher, George Hurst, has a great saying. He says, no margin, no mission.
I don't know what that means.
If you don't have a profit margin, you can't fulfill your mission because there's no...
No people in the church, no listeners.
Exactly. Yeah. So there is some element of that, but if you base your pay entirely upon your performance, well, you know, that is illegal in the state of New York.
It is.
You can't actually have outcomes-based pay, supposedly.
Right.
I mean, there is something to say about the importance of metrics in a world of technology where you can measure readership. Is it the be-all, end-all? It might be, but it has to be, again, weighed against other factors. For instance, if you send a reporter to a school board to cover that meeting, and that meeting doesn't do real well, but it's an important story, do you not pay him? You know, if you pay by the inch, or how do you measure sort of the responsible, important journalism that may not get the viewership of a gallery of nice, cute puppies?
That's a very important point. It really is.
One of the measures of the success of your journalistic organization is the way that you create communities of conversation. There's a new bit of research showing that civic engagement in Denver and Seattle dropped significantly from 2008 to 2009 when both of those cities lost one of their daily newspapers. In Seattle, it was the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Denver, Rocky Mountain News closed. And there are measures that suggest that the drop in civic engagement may be plausibly attributed to the newspaper closures.
Well, Rex, you can only hope.
I don't think the people think about that, though, when they decide where to invest their advertising
dollars. Can I go back to the pay issue? Because I'm interested in that. The idea that, you know, with the State University for years, we got extra money if the administration thought we were doing a better job than other people, so that it created a certain amount of chaos, because then people got very angry. The people who didn't get it got very angry. They started to compete. They started to talk behind your back and say, how come Shartak has all those students in his class? What's he doing to make them happy? Is he really being rigorous? So that there's always this kind of thing happening. Wouldn't that happen in a newsroom, too, if you started tying results to pay?
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. People would start just doing little gimmicks to make their story more click-worthy rather than necessarily more journalistically sound, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why God invented editors.
Yeah.
In theory, to control that and bring it back to the responsible place where it should be.
I get it.
Doing God's work here on this planet. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Stu Shinsky, editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, and Dr. Alan Shartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio. It's the Media Project. If you want to offer your thoughts, we are media@wamc.org. In fact, we did have a letter here from someone who was concerned about the NBC interview of Bodie Miller, and it might be worth talking about this. The American skier Bodie Miller was challenged by a reporter after failing to perform as had been expected, and the question was to what extent he might have been influenced by the sadness about the loss of his brother, during the past year.
So he had won a bronze medal. And so the question then is whether or not that should have been the subject matter as opposed to the loss of the brother. And the so-called reporter who we've argued about around here, which is the question is whether the reporter was a reporter or whether she was something else and just sort
provocateur.
Yeah, but not really a professional journalist. And now we get into this professional journalist stuff and who's a journalist and who's not. We've beaten that horse to death. And what does the letter say, Rexy, that we
need
to know?
Well, the letter basically makes the point that NBC is wrong to be doing this kind of work. It makes us kind of wonder if the network is really being run by sociopaths, is the question that's being raised.
Why sociopath? I mean, that's a very strong word.
It's a very strong word. They've taken an article and forwarded it that makes the point that there are a number of examples of times recently when NBC and MSNBC have performed in a level that seems to be all about inciting rather than elucidating.
It was made clear after this happened that NBC, this is reported widely, NBC had identified this loss of Bodie Miller, of his family member, as a storyline.
Yeah.
They saw the opportunity and they brought it to the fore. They took it to the fore. So yes, it does raise the question of were you going for the tearjerker story or were you reporting on genuine accomplishment? We know what they were doing, but the question is, was it for the ratings? Was it for the news?
Yes,
I think we know the answer.
But as you, we do. But as you pointed out earlier in the program, page views and other things become important criteria. Whether somebody clicked from that station, you know, to something else, you would think that if this was the case, that the New York Post, a name who I don't like to pronounce, would be the number one newspaper in America because you know they only try to get inside people's heads and say what is it that they really want, and we'll give it to them. And while we're giving it to them, we'll give them a bunch of right-wing garbage at the same time.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
I think you did. The question about the interview, which brought Bodie Miller to tears as the camera just stayed trained upon him, is, I think, one that really does become an ethical one. You know, one of the four major tenets of the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists is...
Oh, God, am I going to have to hear this again?
Minimize harm.
Go, garbage. Rex, go.
Minimize harm. I mean, you recognize that your reporting, in some instances, may in fact cause harm. That it may make people unhappy. If you're writing about the indictment of a crooked Paul, you know, his family is going to be harmed by the story, but, you know, that's too bad. That is part of the storytelling.
Well, how about the death of a child and somebody walks up and knocks on the door and says, how does it feel to have a dead child?
Well, that's bad journalism.
Well, you know, there's a way to do that and there's a way not to do that. I've been the young reporter who was charged by his editors with doing that, with going to the home of someone who's lost a child and saying, talk to me about your kid. And some people actually, I tell this story when I'm meeting with groups about actually having that experience and hoping that somebody would not answer the door so that I could go back and tell my editor, well, I tried and I didn't get anything. But the fact is then in a particular instance, I remember being welcomed into a home. People talked to me about their kid, wanted to tell the story.
It's cathartic sometimes.
And I was able to file a story that helped people understand the true grief that exists in this world.
Exactly.
And I think that's part of the value of journalism is to give people a true sense of the world beyond their own experience.
Well, except, yes, yes.
But you do but minimize harm. You don't keep the camera trained on Bodie Miller.
There's a nuanced approach that must be employed.
Yes. Yeah. But going back to Bodie Miller, there was a very interesting repercussion out of this that the reporter was just doing her job.
NBC had said, that's our story. We want that story. You're the reporter. Go get it.
No, but Stu, it wasn't only that. It was that Miller was saying, I don't see this as so bad. Well, everybody else is sitting around, you know, going, tisk, tisk, tisk. Isn't that terrible? You know,
what's happening is there's a producer talking into that reporter's ear. It's Kristen Cooper, who is herself a medal winner. There's a producer talking in her ear saying, keep it going. She asked three questions. It was the third question that finally brought him to silence and to with tears coming down his cheeks. And that's a producer who should be scolded for not knowing when to come out of an interview, basically.
Scolded, you know? Or a network who doubles that producer's pay and says, I mean, I've told this story before and I want to apologize for it in advance. But on one commentary I was doing on television one night, I said something about, you know, this is just sort of public titillation. And I heard in my ear from the producer, I'll give you $100 every time you say that word.
Well, it's also by medium. I mean, television journalism is much different in many ways than the journalism that Northeast Public Radio does.
Yes, that's
newspaper
true.
Journalism is much different than types of magazine journalism. I mean, people hear the media and they throw us all into one wicker basket.
It's a point Rex makes all the time.
Yes, it's
absolutely.
It's true.
We don't engage in titillation.
But we have to learn from each other.
Tuesdays,
we have to learn from each other. I mean, I think there are times when, you know, I hear about a serious story on WAMC, but I've heard it a lot from a bureau chief. And I say, you know, what happened in Springfield, or I'm just making this up, you know, of course, you know, that was the headline on the newspaper as opposed to a very important hunger march again. So we could learn something from you guys. I mean, we're pure, but we could learn from you.
It's knowing your audience. It's who are you trying to reach? What are they interested in? And how do they want that news delivered to them? With TV, it's the mass medium. It's throw every bit of meat in your freezer on the barbecue, cook it all because they want it all. Journalism, my newsroom is different from Rex's newsroom. He's serving a major metropolitan area. I'm serving one county. Different approaches,
what,
different
distinctions. What, Poughkeepsie isn't a major metropolitan area? Watch it now.
Well, we think we're much, much more than others think we are. So.
Oh, I see. I get it.
Okay. Here's an interesting question. A story in the Washington Post, basically in their health and science section last week, was a direct reprint of a press release from a university. In fact, they have a whole column filled with stuff that is apparently a bunch of the latest research going on from universities, and it really amounts to the Washington Post reprinting press releases. Is there justification for that? Is there any reason why we should tut-tut about this, or is this just simply the newspaper at least being of some value in getting this information
out there? Well, tut-tut is something. Tisk-tisk is another whole thing.
Aha.
Yeah, I just want to make that point.
Not to be confused with titillation, right?
Both are titillation.
Are we getting bonus here for this?
Yes.
Right, absolutely.
Well, is it a news story? Or is it an announcement? I mean, we print press releases. We edit them, of course, but they're about an event coming up, for instance.
WAMC had a successful fund drive.
Fund drive, exactly. But if we're talking about a very successful, we should add, very successful fund drive. But if it's a news story that's out there in a press release, again, it's a different classification of how an editor should handle that. It's a totally different situation. What the Washington Post did and the action they took afterward was, in essence, they took it down, took it off their website.
Well, what happened? I'm sorry.
It's just Stanford University had, for example, is the one that is cited here, had released something about some of their research on how women find Tour de France leaders more attractive than riders who are bringing up the rear in the race. So this is a study showing that, quote, we can assess a man's endurance performance by looking at his face. Attractive riders are therefore faster, said the researcher. You know, you're drawn to that story because it's, you
so
say,
what? So what's the big thing? I mean, Harvard announced, for example, as we speak, that they had gotten the largest gift to their endowment ever. You know, so they call up, they ask a couple of questions, they get the president on the phone maybe. But basically, the press release tells it all. So what's wrong with that?
So maybe there's nothing wrong with that, except that traditionally in journalism, we try to bring context to something. The goal of the press release is to glorify Stanford University.
Right.
A good story about this might have other scientists saying, what? This research flies in the face of...
This is a lousy... Because there's other variables like the fact that the people in the front are winners as opposed to losers. And that may turn people
more people are drawn to winners. Yeah. There you go. Absolutely.
And is this the very first time the Washington Post printed a press release?
Hardly.
So, I mean, they've been around, maybe decades, I would think, longer. So what's different here is, well, now they're saying, exactly. There is no context in what they printed.
But just so we all understand, when this kind of thing is done, it's done more as the resources of the news organization decrease.
Yes,
right?
I think that's exactly right. I think that we're really in a situation where we just don't have enough people anymore to do the kind of reporting on this kind of thing, which seems interesting on its face. And so you can probably say, you know, it's not necessarily so harmful for us to do this.
And more reliance on things like Associated Press, for example, than you would if you had, you know, five more reporters working, filling the paper all the time.
This is true. Well, anyway, finally today, we have an opportunity to make note of how dangerous it is to be a reporter in some situations. In Texas, a KTRK reporter named Desmond Fernandez went to interview a guy named Harry Allen Ricketts about sexual charges that the man was facing. This is down in Huffman, Texas. And Ricketts met the reporter at the door with a gun. You know, it just goes to show you, times can be tough for reporters. I don't know. So the reporter is shown on the tape saying, we're leaving. I've never had anybody pull a gun on me for asking a question. I have had people walk out of the room.
I've been threatened here and there, never a gun. There are times, it seems, where journalists are just under siege now more than ever. I think there is more resentment toward many types of journalism, particularly investigative journalism. This was a guy who was following up on a story about sexual abuse and trying to get the other side of the story. He was trying to get a reaction, trying to give the guy fair balance, and this guy pulled a gun. And That's not an allegation. There's video that shows this guy with his gun.
Too many guns around. And when you get stories like the ones coming out of Florida, stand your ground and all the rest, 300 million guns in America. 300 million.
On that. Thank you, Stu. We'll see you next time around.
Thank you so much,
Dr.
gentlemen.
Dr. Chartok.
It's always great. It's always great to have Stu with us.
All right. See you next week on The Media Project.
I see, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ding-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.